Too long I've been afraid of losing love, I guess I lost. Well, if that's love, it comes at much too high a cost. I said I might fall in gravity. Kiss me goodbye.
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Some might say that this is a conversation about defying the odds. The Broadway musical Wicked didn't wow the critics when it opened in 2003, but producers looked to the audience and saw a special sort of enthusiasm. There are people out there who have seen Wicked some 500 times. Some follow the show around the country like deadheads. Followed the Grateful Dead, I guess. Wicked followers wear costumes and green makeup and recite along with the script. The show is in Columbus for about 2 more weeks. I don't know if they've seen any of those here yet, but for a total of 5 weeks, it'll be here, which is about 3 weeks longer than the last stop in 2007. That's a trend across the country. More people than ever want to see more productions than ever of this record-breaking show. So what makes it such a hit? And how does that play out in the heartland? Later on, we'll be talking with Wicked performers Richard Klein, who plays the Wizard, and Randy Danson, who plays Madame Morrible, in the touring show in Columbus right now. We'll also chat with Kappa President and CEO Bill Connor. Right now, we're talking with Steve Winton. He is president of Broadway Across America. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Thanks so much, Ann. Nice to be on.
What makes a great touring show?
Oh, you know, it's so many things, but really it's entertainment value, and entertainment value for the audience. People do want to be entertained. They want to be challenged. They want to have a good time. But ultimately, it's entertainment value and what they've heard of and what they know.
So when Wicked was on Broadway, how does it occur to people that this is going to be the right show? What told you about, or was it in San Francisco where it opened originally, that they knew back then that it would be great on the road?
I think it really hit its stride once it came to New York and people realized what it saw, and enough people saw it and it became what it is today. I think when they were originally looking to put it out on the road, they were a little bit more conservative in their length of bookings. As you mentioned, the last time it played Columbus, it played for a much shorter time.
Right.
And what we found when it started to play these markets was that it was selling out before it even opened. So what would happen is that the next engagement of the show would go on sale while the first one was still in town. And I don't know if you've seen it or not, but it's such an incredible show. It makes you laugh. It makes you cry. It makes you think back to Wizard of Oz. It's great songs, great performances, great direction. It's just terrific.
It's strange. I mean, it was originally conceived perhaps, not the show, but possibly as a movie, a film first, and that they changed their mind and decided to make it a Broadway musical.
Well, I'm so glad they did because, as you know, the interaction between the audience and the people on stage is just great. You just feel a part of it. It's wonderful.
Yeah, the hooting and hollering kind of surprised me a little bit. I mean, before it even started, the lights went down and people started whooping.
I will say I've seen it 7 times, both in New York and on the road. And I actually have never – I've heard it beforehand and I've heard it at the end, but I've never heard it during the show, hopefully.
All right. Steve Winton, he's president of Broadway Across America. He's my guest right now. Coming up later, Richard Klein and Randy Dawson of the production Wicked. In Columbus. I'm looking at Richard Klein and it's saying The Wizard, and I want to say The Wizard, and I'm getting all confused. It is, of course, a play on the Wizard of Oz. It's a spinoff, they're calling it. Does that contribute to the success that it's a spinoff of something that some children have watched every day of their lives since they were born practically now with video and DVDs?
To be honest with you, I think it does. I mean, it's really the prequel. It's what happens before Dorothy falls into Oz. And it made my experience of seeing it so much more fulfilling because I came in knowing everybody, which was great because you automatically have feelings about each of the characters and the story and what happens before. It's sort of like when you see a sequel. Remember when we saw the sequel of The Godfather and we enjoyed it so much? And then we saw like the third version and the movie wasn't very good, but you loved it because you knew the people. You know the people in Wicked, and it's terrific. It makes the experience so much better.
Do different productions get different levels of treatment? In other words, is the production, do they vary from city to city at all?
You mean different shows or different productions of Wicked?
Different productions of Wicked.
No, actually, if you see one place, you see the exact same thing in another. They've done a great job of recreating it.
How many are out there now?
To be honest with you, I wouldn't even know. I know that they're all over the world.
Richard,
so it's not just in the U.S. Maybe Richard knows.
Richard.
There's the Emerald City Tour, there's the Munchkinland Tour, and there's a sit-down company in San Francisco, as well
Japanese
as New York.
Japanese and German.
Of course. And Australia.
and London.
In Germany, it's called Wicked.
Oh, in London, right.
In Germany, it's called Wicked.
Richard Klein, the Wizard, is with us as well. We'll be talking with him a little bit more in a few minutes. And also you heard Randy Danson, Madame Morrible, from the show. Fantastic. What's the demographic? There's been a lot of chit-chat about that. I know the producers like to say it's 1 to 80, but maybe other people like to insist that it's that tweener group.
You know what? I think it's everything. I think they are right that it's one, may not be one, but maybe 3 to 80.
Okay.
But it's whole families. It's single people. It's married people. The one part of the audience that they've seemed to capture that the rest of the shows struggle with from time to time are the tweeners, because you can't help but love the journey and the story that is Wicked. And for some reason, it speaks to that age group in addition to all the other ones.
Now, I was walking the dog this morning, and one of my dog walker people said that he was going to see it this weekend, and he was complaining about that money. He said those tickets are a lot more expensive than he's used to paying than usual. Wicked is more expensive?
It is more expensive. And you know what? I think you get your money's worth. I think that the show and the presenters work together to see what mix of funds are needed in order to make the show happen. There are very cheap tickets. There are very expensive tickets. And it depends on where you're sitting in the audience. But I will say you definitely get your money's worth. It's a huge production and really incredible.
It is. It's absolutely fabulous. And I was wondering, how do you decide how much you are going to invest in a production, how much you're going to stick your neck out on the sets and everything?
I think there are many different factors that go into that. Part of it is, how big is the show? How small is the show?
Mm-hmm.
Part of it is it a huge crowd pleaser, or is it very a specific demographic? I think that as you look at Wicked on tour, you see this huge success that's happened in New York and it started the road. So there's no need to make it less than it is everywhere else. And unfortunately, because it is the way it is on Broadway, it costs more to operate and to build, and thus the tickets are a little bit more expensive. But it definitely pays off.
How soon, how early on do your folks who are building the sets have to get into a venue and prepare beforehand?
You mean get into a Broadway situation is different than the road.
Right, on the road, I'm sorry.
On the road, if you're talking about a normal one-week tour, it's probably not a dramatic amount of time. They usually get in about a couple weeks beforehand and into the theater. The sets have been built, and they come out and are delivered, and everyone sort of puts it up for the first time. As it relates to Wicked, actually, Richard or Randy might be able to better explain how long that took.
I know that that there are a couple of elements of the set that we have two of, and that one hopscotch is ahead of us. But most of the set is taken down Sunday after our last show and is barrels off to the next city in the trucks and is put up in a couple of days. It's incredible what the crews can manage.
Yeah, Wicked's one of the most efficient productions on the road given the size of the production. So for us, there's what they call front of house, so the sound and some of the front of house lighting gets loaded in just about a week prior. But the actual show takes a couple days, literally, just a couple days to get in from the jump set to the final sets. So it's very efficient.
And most road tours between cities usually take, I would say, Bill, you correct me if I'm wrong, but about 8 hours to load out and about 16 hours to load in. The first stop is usually more complicated and takes a little while longer.
How does a place like Columbus rank as a venue these days out of the 42 North American cities that you work through?
You know what? It's very strong. We do have some. There's another city in Ohio, Cincinnati, that has a 2-week subscription, and that's a little bit larger. But on the whole, it ranks quite strongly. There's a lot of support for theater in Columbus.
Is it just in ticket sales, or how do you measure it strictly?
It's in ticket sales. It's in subscription sales. We have a very strong subscription in Columbus. It's a little bit of everything. It's in group sales. It's in house shows, how the longer shows play, whether that be Jersey Boys or Wicked or Lion King or something like that.
You know, there's so many accolades for this show. It's been fun kind of sifting through them. But one of them, the New York Times called it the defining musical of the decade. And that was it's been 7 years now. And I was wondering, how much does Wicked have left in it? How do you measure something like that? How far are you looking now? Let me ask you that.
Several years, but all you need to do is look at the length of the last play in Columbus and the length of this play in Columbus to see that it's not diminishing. It's just growing at the moment.
It's growing.
So it has a long life out of it.
It's here for 5 weeks. Is that pretty typical?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Steve Winton, president of Broadway Across America. I'm glad you could join us today.
Oh, thank you so much, and best of luck.
All right, thanks.
Take care.
We're going to take a short break, and then when we return, we'll be with Bill Connor, president and CEO of Kappa, and also Richard Klein, the Wizard, and Randy Danson, Madame Morrible. If you have questions or comments, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org, or go to All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. Post your question or comment there. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, an alarming new study says spending on state Supreme Court election campaigns has more than doubled in the past decade. We'll ask if American justice is for sale. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
And On Point begins at 1 o'clock this afternoon, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher today. 75 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:19. Sunshine today and a beautiful day, a high of 83. Clouds moving in tonight, a low of 63 degrees. A few clouds for Wednesday and a high of 85. And looking ahead to Thursday, sunny skies and a high near 90. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820. NPR News.
Popular. You're gonna be popular. I'll teach you the proper poise when you talk to boys. Little ways to flirt and glance. Ooh, I'll show you what shoes to wear, how to fix your hair. Everything that really counts to be popular. I'll help you be popular. You'll hang with the right cohorts. You'll be good at sports. Know the slang.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher, and as I said at the top of the hour, I'm not looking for a makeover from Glinda myself, but I enjoyed her efforts in the show Wicked. It's showing at the Ohio Theater right now. It'll be showing about 13 more days, give or take days off or time off. I don't know how it works. But right now, joining us, Bill Connor. He's president and CEO of Columbus Association for the Performing Arts. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Thanks, Ann.
And also with us, veteran actor Richard Klein. He plays the Wizard.
Hi, Ann.
Hi, Richard. Thanks for joining us.
Good to be here.
And veteran actor Randy Damson.
Dancing with an N.
Dancing with an N.
Yeah, that's a typo.
I know. It's a typo. Who plays Madame Morrible? Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Hi.
Now, both of you are coming up on your one-year anniversary with the show, right?
Right.
Yes.
Did you join at exactly the same time?
Yep.
Much?
Absolutely. August 25th of last year, we started rehearsal.
Oh, you said
not that I'm counting the days or anything. Why would I do that?
So what do you think? What do you think sets it apart from the rest?
It's such a great question. You know, it's sort of been a meditation of mine for the last year is what is it? I don't know. There's some step that's ineffable that gets past like a great hit and moves it into this other stratosphere that And I don't know what it is. I don't know. It's something magic happens, and it just pops the thing into another realm altogether. And I'm really feeling very lucky to be part of a show that's happened to.
I've been doing this for quite a long time because basically I'm old, and
that's why she's a veteran.
Thank you. You'll get your turn, Bill.
That's a bad euphemism.
I have never at a curtain call been a part of the experience of what happens at the curtain call for Wicked. It's just astounding. Yeah. It's like I've never been a rock star, although I wanted to be that and a shortstop for the Yankees. But I've never seen anything like what happens at our curtain call. It's just – it's a phenomenon. And Randy's absolutely right. It just – it goes into another dimension. People come back to see the show. I mean, I know my only experience, theatrical experience as an audience member is seeing Les Mis four times. But, I mean – this, and you talk about longevity for the show. I can't see this thing ever slowing down because I think it's going to be passed from generation to generation.
Yeah, whole families are going to see
Absolutely. And it's a family show, and the demographic is 3 to 80 because there's something in it for everyone.
When the cast was on stage at the end and everyone's whooping and hollering, as I mentioned earlier, the cast looked just really happy. Are you just really
it blows your hair
happy?
Back. You know, it's pretty.
It never gets old?
No, it really doesn't. It's pretty hard not to get just sort of knocked with that big wave of love and not feel like, hey, life is good. It's a pretty good.
It's exhilarating.
Elevator.
It really is.
Ben Brantley of the New York Times in 2003 called Wicked a technicolorized sermon of a musical, which I thought was kind of an interesting little phrase. Who could disagree with the color part? I mean, the visuals are absolutely fabulous. I love your costumes,
aren't
by the way,
amazing?
Madame Morrible. I mean, they are just so amazing. But what about that sermon of a musical? Do you feel like it's sermonizing?
Oh, I don't know. I think sermonizing maybe has a kind of negative spin to it, and I don't think it is negative at all. But I do think it's an examination of what's good, what's evil, what is the gray area in between, and how the interaction of things that we may place far apart from each other on the scale of good and evil, when they interact, how perhaps a more evolved and interesting level of goodness can arise out of that.
Bill Connor, what is your experience when something like Wicked's coming to the Ohio or coming to Central Ohio and Columbus? Do you get excited?
Oh, we get.
Is it? I mean, what do you?
It's hard not to. I mean, Wicked. Like I think you hear, Wicked's in its own world. It speaks to people in a very immediate way. And of all the shows that we get to work with, more people see it, turn right around, go back to the box office, and come right back. So if a couple comes, they see the production, they think, oh, my gosh, we should bring our kids. Oh, we should bring our mother's coming to town. It's something that people feel so positive and immediate about sharing with other people. When it opened, it had its pre-Broadway tryout out in San Francisco.
Right.
And so all of us, you know, we're all – the theater business, we all kind of watch each other. We're very warm and loving, kind of not really. But and so everyone kind of wanted to see what was going to happen because it's a very, very large production. You know, the risk on a production this big is pretty significant. And it opened, and it was one of the most unique moments for San Francisco. And San Francisco is a very sophisticated market. And within 3 days, the word of mouth hit. Not the reviews or any of the pre kind of press that we do, but the word of mouth hit, and the show in our mind, what we call it, went vertical. It just sold every ticket. And it's been that way from the very beginning. So for us, having Wicked come to Columbus is very exciting because it comes with all that. And the audiences that have seen it are all wanting to come back and see it a second time, and everyone in Central Ohio wants to come. So for us, it's a positive. We get people coming from outside of 270. So
and the advertising budget is very small.
It's okay. No, it's a significant advertising budget. I mean,
but you don't have to advertise that much, do you?
Not that much. I mean, Wicked is – this is going to be – we were very fortunate. Wicked was here for 3 weeks a couple years ago. This run, every week, quite honestly, we're setting a new box office record for Columbus. And we'll probably do about $7 million worth of ticket sales for the five-week run. So, yeah, I would say that it's a pretty positive experience.
When you're setting up your season, how does that work? Is it all come right from Broadway Across America, or how does it work? How do you decide what's going to come to Columbus?
Well, I think what we all do is we look to New York. You know, I mean, we're very eager to see each season what happens on Broadway. And, you know, I mean, currently we're working on the 2011-12 season. And in each year – and actually, it's pretty good. I mean, there was a time I've been in the business for a while. There was a time that we used to kind of bemoan that we didn't have a lot of really wonderful musicals or plays or whatever in terms of creativity. But really, the last decade – in the United States, musical theater, which is our art form. It's, if there's two things we own, it's jazz and musical theater, really has been in a renaissance. I mean, we have had one incredibly wonderful production after another in New York. So.
It seems like everything is being reconceived. You know, now it's going to be Legally Blonde. Well, you know, I, frankly, I've seen the movie, but yes, of course a musical. To me, it makes perfect sense. Wicked, when I read the book. Now, did you read the book, mm-hmm. Randy? Did you read the book?
I read half of it.
Okay. It's a very complicated book. Yeah. No question about it.
There's a reason why I read half of it, because it was so dark and the wizard in the book was conceived as so nefarious that I did not want to take that with me into rehearsal. So I just put it down. I thought it was an extraordinary piece of literature, and I'll probably finish it after my run, but I didn't want to be influenced by that the darkness.
There is a song that the wizard sings, a sentimental man, mm-hmm. and it's sort of, oh, I don't know, kind of an apology. Afaba and Glinda are meeting the wizard. They meet the wizard, and they've avoided the special effects which he uses for the benefit of most visitors, the man behind the screen. Mm-hmm. He invites Elphaba to join him. And
Elphaba.
I'm sorry.
That's which, right. By the way, is an acronym for L. Frank Baum, who wrote
yes,
The Wizard of Oz.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's listen to it. Elphaba.
So, Elphaba, I'd like to raise you high, 'cause I think everyone deserves the chance to fly. And helping you with your ascent allows me to feel so parental, for I am a sentimental man.
Okay.
That sounds very much like Joel Grey.
Not Richard Clark.
I mean, you know, he can really sing good.
We didn't make a recording of this show yet.
I'll sing it for you if you want.
Well, you said the character was dark when you were reading the book, but it's not so much. It is kind of in the show, too.
It's both. I mean, he's just trying to do a job, you know. This thing was written in 2003 during a certain administration that shall remain nameless. And so there were elements of that kind of, what do they call that? Oligarchy, whatever the hell it was. Mm-hmm, anyway, mm-hmm. But he's a con man who lands in the Emerald City and gets power and wants to keep the power. And so how do you do that? You please the people, you give them what you think they want, or you give them what the powers that be want them to have. And so there's that element of how do I maintain power and still be charming. And then there's the other element of he's just, you know, he's just a guy. He calls himself a corn-fed hick. You know, he's mm-hmm. just a guy. They called me wonderful, the signature song that I sing in the second act. They called me wonderful, and I said, okay, wonderful. I'll be wonderful. What do you want me to do? And so, but he's not evil. Like Madame Morrible.
I was going to say that would be me.
So that's a good segue to Madame Morrible on my left.
Madame Morrible. Tell us about Madame Morrible.
I think, yeah, on this scale of good and evil, I think she's probably furthest over at the evil end of the scale.
Why is
she
that?
She kind of is the villain. I think she's the most psychotic in a way. She doesn't really have
all the psychotic people.
She doesn't really have a way of connecting to people other than through her desire to have power. I think she's all about the power and manipulating her way into higher and higher levels of power in this society and using people to get there. And as long as people are helping her with that, like in the beginning, Elphaba is on board with it until she finds out what's really involved. Then, you know, Elphaba is my best friend. But the minute Elphaba opts out, it's like, get her. You know, she has no lasting human connection to anyone. And I think at the end, it's just gone completely crackers. She's like over the edge.
I read the book, but I did not read the story for the musical. And I'm wondering, is Madame Morrible compromised at the outset? Does she already have a relationship with the wizard and she's just trying to funnel powers to him?
I think to some extent, this is the way I imagine it, that she has been kind of, from the outset, from birth, she's been sort of at the edge of society the same way Elphaba kind of is. And maybe because she has some abilities or what. And then she's using her wits and her sorcerer abilities to wheedle herself closer and closer into the power source.
Okay.
And being the head of Shiz University is one of these steps. And I think she knows that the wizard is looking for somebody with real ability. So she's searching. And when Elphaba comes along, it's like, yeah. And she uses Elphaba to buy her way into a position with the wizard and into the heart of government, of the power structure, if you will, because she's finally found her ticket in.
Well, my producer, Amy, thinks we have a good cut of a song from Madame Morrible that makes her sound kind of evil. So we'll listen to that now.
What?
The day you were first summoned to an audience with Oz, and although he would not tell you why initially, when you bowed before his throne, he decreed you'd hence be known as Glinda the Good officially. Then with a jealous scream, the wicked witch burst from concealment where she had been lurking surreptitiously.
Okay.
Yeah, that's Madame Morrible rewriting history because Elphaba has decided she wants no part of this, but Glinda is still interested in being a rock star. So she starts to use Glinda as her way in. And so she rewrites history about how that whole emergence on the scene happened for Glinda, which is not what happened at all. She's just like completely made it up. So,
which happens, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's been known to.
I think it's called the big lie, isn't it?
Something like that. Yeah. A lot of things fall under that category.
Exactly.
It's interesting to me in the show how all the characters are sort of straddling these realities of good and evil, either in the in people's minds and how they're perceived by the public or in reality. And Glinda is one of them that does. One minute you like her, and the next minute she scares you.
Yeah.
It's an interesting – do you feel like that with your characters that you're weaving out? Now, Madame Morrible is probably one, as we said earlier, one of the more consistently rotten eggs in the bunch.
Yeah, but I think in the beginning you don't know that. I think
right.
In the beginning she seems to be kind of a dotty, you know, woman and sort of odd but not necessarily evil. And you see her turn when Elphaba pulls out of the game.
Right.
And then you find out what she's really made of. But the story with Glinda and Elphaba is a little less cut and dried, because I think that in a way Glinda is really sweet and good and knows how to be with people and talk to people and make people feel good, but she's a little thoughtless and self-involved, and Elphaba on the other hand is all about other people and caring, but she's a complete nightmare to be with and is asocial and doesn't know how to behave and puts people off. And the two of them sort of, you know, blend into each other and create two extraordinary women.
The wizard, even in The Wizard of Oz, I never really liked him.
Okay.
Sort of a huckstery type of – I didn't trust him. And, you know, when he floated away in that balloon, you just wanted to shoot him.
All right.
So how did you go into the part feeling about him?
Well, like I said, first I started reading Greg Maguire's book, and mm-hmm. I had to put it down because he was so evil to me. But I see, you know, I look for elements of humor in just about everything I do, even in when I'm playing dramatic roles. And I was attracted to the humor of the guy. I was attracted to the charm of the guy. And I, you know, I did not want the audience leaving the theater thinking, oh, the wizard is, you know, Snidely Whipgrass, whatever that name is.
Whiplash.
Snidely.
Whiplash.
Whip Snide or whatever. Whiplash. Whatever. I don't know. It's very early. Anyway, so I wanted to make him as charming and not, you know, in any way, shape, or form, obviously, evil. And you have to do that as an actor because people playing villains, and I don't think he is a classic villain, but people who are playing supposedly shady guys never think they're shady, and they never think they're villain. They never think they're bad. They're just they're, you know, they have a goal. I want to get this done. I want the Emerald City to run smoothly, and I want this girl who has these powers to help me, just like you talked about. And that's my want. That's my job as the wizard. So that was my approach. Did I confuse you?
No.
Okay, because
nope.
I just confused myself.
Nope.
I have no idea what I just
said. I think the idea is they don't see themselves as evil is what there's the redemption of their own redemption is that they don't see themselves that way, so they can't be all bad, right?
Right.
All righty, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk more. We'll hear a little bit more music. We'll talk with Richard Klein, the wizard, and Randy Danson, Madame Morrible, in the production of Wicked at the Ohio Theater right now. Join the conversation, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
It seems like happiness.
We lost a great jazz singer Saturday when Abby Lincoln died at the age of 80. On the next Fresh Air, we'll listen back to an interview with her. Join us.
He's got a smile that makes the life.
And Fresh Air will be here at noon in just about 20 minutes on WOSU 820 NPR News. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. Thanks for joining us. Hear more of WOSU anytime at WOSU.org. Listen to All Sides whenever you want with the online archive. Podcast new and archive shows from all the guests and topics. Podcast All Sides at WOSU.org/All Sides. And your membership means that your trusted local and national news and information can continue on WOSU. Is it time to renew your membership? Just visit us online at WOSU.org. And thank you for your support. It's 76 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:40 this morning, sunshine today, and a high of 83, clouds tonight, a low of 63 degrees. More clouds on Wednesday and a high of 85. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
He'll say to me, I see who you truly are, a girl on whom I can rely. And that's how we'll begin, the wizard and I. Once I'm with the wizard, my whole life will change. Once you're with a wizard, no one thinks you're strange.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about Wicked. It's showing for another couple weeks at the Ohio Theater. Joining us today, Bill Connor, President and CEO of the Columbus Association for the Performing Arts. Welcome back, Bill, to the show. Thanks for being here.
Hi.
And Richard Klein, he is the wizard, and Randy Danson, Madame Morrible, in the production at Ohio Theater right now. Thanks again for being with us. This
Thank
is
you.
Early, I know.
It's a pleasure.
We were talking about how late the show goes. It's about 2 hours and 45 minutes long, which is long, typically. Untypically
long? Yeah, it's on the longer end, but it's not long. I mean, it's within the normal scale on the long side.
It's not changing.
But it's not unnormal is what I'm trying to say.
Okay. Many shows are about
something
2.5
like
hours, so
yeah.
It's not that much
extra
longer.
15 minutes, it didn't seem long. It didn't seem long. It flew by.
Yeah.
It flew by. When you're looking out in the audience, Randy and Richard, who are you seeing out there? Is it different from other shows you've done?
Not specifically. I mean, it's a very mixed crowd, as we've talked about. You mm-hmm. see a lot of kids, but you also see a lot of grandparents, and you see a lot of people in between. You see a lot of young professionals. I mean, it's really a great kind of mix. I mean, I guess what's different is maybe it's a younger audience in a way, because a lot of theater audience in general in America now tends to be 50 and older. They're the people with the disposable income, and mm-hmm. I guess they're also the people with the greatest interest. But this show really cuts into all age levels, so you see a great mixture of age, which is nice.
614-292-8513. If you want to talk with Richard Klein or Randy Danson of Wicked, it's showing at the Ohio Theater right now. What do you think, or why do you think it's the most successful musical of all time? There's all kinds of theories out there, because it's the tween thing.
Personally, I think it has everything. I think it has a clever book. It's an amazing concept. I mean, to think about the good witch and the bad witch starting out in college as two girls who hate each other and seeing that journey, that's amazing. And as we talked about previously, the idea of the association that people have with the Wizard of Oz, with the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that resonating throughout that. The sets are sumptuous. The music is serviceable. It's not the greatest music in the world, but it's totally serviceable and personally wonderful to sing. And so you have these elements. And as far as the sermonizing is concerned that Mr. Brantley talked about in his review, Hairspray, Avenue Q, these are all shows that, you know, will run forever, and there's a bit of proselytizing in both of them. But they're entertainment, and they're well done, and they're clever, and people love them, and they flock to them. So Dear Ben's got to write something. I don't know. Obviously, history has proved him
wrong.
Wrong.
Is there a great Broadway show out there, though, that doesn't have a message?
Well, I was going to say, I think all the shows that we love all have points of view. That's the whole point. Yeah. You know, I mean, every musical, everything that Richard was discussing, Les Mis, every production has something that it's telling us. If it doesn't, then it doesn't resonate with – it doesn't have that ability to move people.
When I saw Phantom of the Opera, the message that I took away was never sit under a chandelier. So there's something for
everyone.
Keep
your head down.
Thank you.
When they made the reference to having somebody to hate – mm-hmm. It was Orwellian. I mean, that was sort of overtly, you know, Orwellian to me.
Well, and when the show was initially being conceived and created was right after 9/11. So
right.
The whole notion of the country gripped in fear and outside, you know, elements giving the power structure greater power. And that all had a lot more immediate resonation at that moment.
Let's see, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. What is your favorite part of the show? Is it necessarily what you're in, or do you have other parts that you enjoy?
Oh, well, everything Richard does is my favorite.
Thank you.
Good answer.
That's a really good answer,
Randy. Just to keep peace in the studio, it's a very good answer, but.
Well, The most fun thing for me to do is the drag off at the very end, which I really enjoy. when I'm hauled off to jail is my favorite part.
Start raving mad.
Yeah, yeah, that's really kind of the most fun to play.
I sometimes, you know, I've been with Randy for 10 months now, almost a year, and occasionally I'll stand backstage at the end of the act one and watch. The defying gravity.
Oh, yeah.
And every time I see it, it gives me chills. It gives me a thrill
fabulous.
To watch that.
And it's funny how when Glinda arrives in the bubble, everybody laughs mm-hmm. because it's one of the most ridiculous things if you think about it. And it's funny what makes everybody laugh together, too.
Uh-huh.
The different Glinda is someone everyone's supposed to love from Wizard of Oz, but you're allowed to hate her a little bit in this, too. And that feels kind of good.
Yeah. She's kind of like the spoiled girl you didn't like in high school.
Yeah.
Yeah. The one who always had the cool shoes and the best outfits, and everybody loved her, and she was a cheerleader, and you wanted to pop her one.
Right. You knew she must have a backstory, but you didn't care about her, because if this is how she wound up.
Yeah.
We have an email from a listener. Beelzebub is evil. The English word means prince of devils. Evil is often charming. That's part of what makes it so insidious. So evil is charming. I don't know.
I think Richard's proving that for us.
I think
he's doing a great job.
Good point.
Thank you, Bill.
614-292-8513. If you have a question or comment, give us a call. How does this rank in Columbus now? Is it all-time number one? No question about it.
First time it came for 3 weeks, it was number one. Now it's here for 5 weeks. It'll break every box office record we've ever had. Lion King, Wicked. The nicest part about it is Wicked's going to beat Wicked. So it's and audience-wise, it's amazing the elasticity and how much people really, really love and share this particular musical.
It's been called family friendly, but children under age 4, it says that they're not permitted. What's the cutoff there? How do you decide something like that?
Well, it's
hard. They don't even know what's going on if they're that young. So.
Part of our problem is it's hard for them to actually see in a theater. You know, so when you get – it's a height thing. So, yeah, it's a little bit difficult. And also at some point kids are kids, and so some 4-year-olds could do it, but many can't. So they don't have the ability to stay to sit for two hours and 45 minutes. And our whole raison d'etre here is to provide the best audience experience for people to see Wicked. So a 4-year-old may not provide that experience for others around them.
I was sitting next to a young kid in the theater when I saw it. They got a little antsy, but it was amazing how much, as soon as the monkeys got there, they were all settled down again. They relaxed and everything.
Yeah.
Someone wants to know if there are munchkins in Wicked. And there are munchkins. There's
Absolutely.
A very prominent, is it Ock?
Bach.
Bach. I'll get the names right eventually. But Bach. But munchkins, again, they're not as sweet and cute as they seem in the movie either, necessarily.
Bach is pretty sweet and cute, don't you think?
But he's got the ability not to be.
Then he turns into the – I don't know. I haven't watched the show. What happens to him?
I don't know. Should we tell?
Maybe we can't tell.
Well, I don't know. I mean, they don't seem that as sweet and cute as they did in the movie, Wizard of Oz.
Well, maybe not. Maybe not. I don't know. I always think of Bach as being a pretty dear character. But
flawed, damaged.
Yes, but he's damaged because he's been treated so badly. You get the feeling that munchkins are kind of get the fuzzy end of the popsicle stick in Oz. Things don't go so well for them.
How did you keep it? We were talking earlier about when you're in front of the audience and people are just smacking you with love up there at the end. How do you keep it fresh, though, just in anticipation of that, or week after week, night after night?
You know, but in any play that you do for a long period of time, that's always the goal, whether you're going to get smacked with love or not. And really, it's not perhaps as tricky as it may seem, because each moment for an actor is a task they have to achieve, and you go out and you achieve the task. So every time it's a little different for you, because every time it's going to be a slightly different way through the maze of getting that task solved. So it's like baking a cake over and over again. You have to, you still have to crack each egg and stir it all up and put it all together. And so each step is its own step every time.
You said earlier, do you still have rehearsals?
We do. One of the things that I think is so extraordinary about this production is that the producers have been remarkably responsible stewards of what they have. They have an extraordinary thing in Wicked, and they take such good care of it. And that means that that musical directors, choreographers, directors will come
I would say once every month or so, and see the show and give notes and have rehearsals and clean little things up. And we also, of course, have people coming and going all the time. You have new cast members come in and people leave tour and people come into tour. So they have to be also rehearsed and put into the show. So it's sort of constantly being maintained in a really, to my mind, very professional and responsible way, which made me so happy. Because when I came in, I knew I was coming into something that had been going on for 5 years. And I thought, this could be a little tired by now, you know, and was knocked out by how fresh and how well-maintained the show is.
I have to second what Randy said. I was very impressed with that. That stewardship, as you say, to keep this thing as crystal clear and fresh as it first opened on Broadway, whatever, it's pretty amazing.
And on all levels too, you know, the people who maintain the costumes and the props and the sets, they are absolutely the best. You know, they are always on it. They are always taking care of everything. And, you know, the number of costumes and the complexity of the costumes in the show, which are just the best,
awesome.
Right?
They are the most beautiful costumes. I think, not that I'm some kind of paragon of knowledge on them, but they are just absolutely, Bill, I mean,
they're gorgeous. And I think it takes a small village to keep this production together.
Yeah.
When you think about the stagehands, the people who are behind the scenes, every day those costumes all have to be cleaned. Many of them have to be repaired. They're very complicated costumes, so the repair on them takes quite a bit of skill. And so the entire team is probably the best. These particular producers have a wonderful way of bringing all the best people in our business together in each of their companies. And so that kind of permeates everything that happens in the Wicked family.
It's absolutely true. It's just like driving in a Cadillac all the time. You know, everything is always like the best. You know, you can turn to anybody and say, oh, I'm having a problem with this. Boom. And it's just like immediately dealt with and dealt with brilliantly.
Fix the costumes sort of parallel that alternate universe kind of a thing. They're traditional looking, but a little skewed.
Yeah.
And someone was somewhat, not disparaging, but dismissive of that. And I loved it.
Oh, yeah.
Someone in some, you know, whatever, some critic somewhere.
Yeah.
And I thought, what? I just thought that little twist on everything.
Sure, that everything was a little off or, yeah.
Right, just a little off. In fact, you know, of course, Madame Horrible is the queen of a little off.
Right.
We have an email from Tom, which probably pertains to her characters, which is, Eddie, perhaps discuss the evolution of the mispronunciation and creation of words by the Madam's character, Malaprops.
Oh, she's not the only one.
I
don't think it's her so much as it is that world, that this is the language of Oz is a little off. So it's, you know, congratulations and, of course, my brain is dying now. I can't think of any of them.
Devastated,
yes. That the words are, every now and then there's a word that's a little, what? Braverism instead of bravery. But it's not just Morrible. Almost all of the characters use that language at some point or other.
There's something very pronounced about how she does it, though.
Well,
of course, she's very pronounced.
She is.
Pronouncing.
Yeah, she likes the sound of her own voice, I think.
The wizard doesn't have any malapropisms, but
off
stage I do. It's a quirk that I have.
Do you have to hold yourself back on stage sometimes?
Yeah, but on stage his lines are not malapropped.
But you're not from there. You speak Kansas.
I'm from Kansas. Right.
He's the familiar figure.
Right.
The man behind the screen. We have an email from Paul. I just want to thank Kappa for its efforts to bring great performances as well as affordable entertainment to Columbus. I first saw the Ohio Theater as an adult when Mary Bishop showed me through the place when it was a wreck. There's, of course, a story behind Ohio Theater. I don't know if you know that. Underneath the peeled paint, chipped plaster, and rotted cloth was a diamond in the rough. She talked me into becoming a Kappa member at that day. We have membership numbering 10-something. 10, it can't be. And always gives the folks at Kappa pause when we call into the box office. A membership number. I don't know what that means. But do you know what that means when they're saying membership number 10-something? Yeah.
But we have a wonderful membership group, and so I'm sure they have a special phone number. So
okay.
They're very special.
Okay. How do you like Columbus?
I love it. The entire cast gives it an A+. We're so pleasantly surprised. Love the town. I love being downtown. downtown that's vibrant, and talking about the Ohio Theater. A friend of mine who actually lives in Newark, Ohio, told me a little bit about the history of how the theater was saved from the wrecking ball, and that's terrific because it is an actual palace of gorgeousness.
What a great place to have that show,
it's
too.
Thrill.
It just all blends together, the stars in the ceiling.
The dragon coming out of the top of the proscenium looks like it's meant to be there, doesn't it?
It was gorgeous. But as someone mentioned, that you, some of the cast members and other crew go to their restaurant quite a bit, and they're also excited to have them. It's nice to have places downtown to go to and be
Absolutely.
At.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of downtown America now closes at like 3 o'clock, you know, every time after businessmen have had their lunch, boom, you're done.
Right.
It's a little hard when you're living a nighttime life in downtown sometimes, but it's very vibrant here. We've some great food. We've had some
great
amazing meals.
We love the Short North and the ice cream parlor there, which shall remain nameless. Okay, Jenny's.
Jenny's. When we come in,
what's
we get a free trio.
Of the 87 flavors, I'm up to 33 right now.
You still have 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Man, Jenny's is really the best.
So where next? Where do you head next?
Boston.
Boston. Well, that's not so bad.
No.
That's not chopped liver.
No, it's not chopped liver at all. And it's near home for a lot of us, so we get to go home a little bit, which is nice.
That's great. Well, I want to say thanks to all of you for being in the on the show today. Thanks to everybody for listening. Okay, we still have more time than I thought. So, good. I get to ask more of that. So, tell me, what is your favorite restaurant? You like Jenny's Ice Cream.
Can we mention names of local?
Yeah, sure.
Went to Barcelona. I was blown away. We've been to Rigsby's. It's terrific.
We went to Rigsby's last night. Love it. Tip top across the street from where we're staying. It's
tip top.
And it's open till 2 in the morning, so that works really well for
the
cast.
It's right around the corner.
Potato fries.
We made friends at Mitchell's Steakhouse. It's also nearby.
So. In fact, I think they're going to – aren't they doing a party or something for the gala? Do you want to talk about the gala, what you guys are going to do?
There's a gala?
There's a benefit.
Yeah.
Oh, we should talk about the benefit very briefly. Do we have time?
Yes.
We have just enough time.
Monday, the 23rd of August at Access Nightclub. It's My Wicked, Wicked Ways, not about Errol Flynn, but about the cast. And we're going to – members of the cast, including myself, are going to sing and do a little comedy. And Nina West, who is a local female impersonator celebrity here in Ohio, is going to be the seamstress, whatever.
Okay.
Whatever that is. And so that's going to be a lot of fun. It's a benefit for Broadway Cares, Equity Fights AIDS, and some local charities.
Okay. So where can people?
I think our local aids our local aids committee is working, and they'll be one of the beneficiaries as well.
So if people want to learn more about that, where do they go, Bill?
They should go to Kappa's website, just kappa.com, and it's all on there, and it's going to be pretty wonderful. Broadway Cares, Equity Fights AIDS is a very important component of our community. So the fact that the cast is doing this is just part of who we are as people in the theater. So
okay. Well, I'm glad we had a chance to mention that. So you can go to WOSU.org/allsides, our website, and we'll have a link to that for you if you want to learn more about it. Thank you so much, Bill Connor, President, CEO of Kappa. Appreciate you being here today.
Thank you.
And also Richard Klein, the Wizard in Wicked.
Thank you, Anne.
Showing now at Ohio Theater. Thanks. Happy travels. And also Randy Danson, Madame Morrible in Wicked, showing at the Ohio Theater. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. That's all the time we have for All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820, NPR News.